Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I think a trade for Vasquez, very unlikely for them. I'm not, you know, I don't like to rule anything out because you never know. Certainly, there's going to be a lot of interest in Vasquez, and he would bring a lot back. If you look at the last few years, the relievers that were traded actually brought back more than the starters, and this is a guy with a lot of years to go on his contract. He would bring back a significant haul.
John Heyman, MLB Network, on with our morning show. Calls a Felipe Vasquez trade unlikely. And I am going to start this hour by asking this question. How important is the closer? How important is the closer, the ninth inning guy? When you're putting together a winning team, when you're evaluating your prospects of winning long term, you're thinking about your nucleus. You're trying to assemble a team that can compete and contend year in and year out. How important is the closer? The Red Sox let their closer walk after winning last year's World Series. Boston wins. Craig Kimbrel gets the last outs. They say in the offseason, thanks for your services. We appreciate what you did here. Good luck finding a new deal. We're good without you. The Astros, 2 years ago, when Houston won the World Series, Charlie freaking Morton was closing out Game 7. When the small market Royals won the World Series, they did it in part because they had a deep bullpen. But they didn't have Mariano Rivera. They had Greg Holland. You know, the Cubs, when they won it and ended the curse, they traded for Aroldis Chapman. And then they got to a Game 7 of the World Series. And what did Chapman do? He blew the save. Pirate great, former Bucco, Rajay Davis took him deep. How important is the closer when you're building a team? How much do you want to invest in a pitcher that gets you 3 outs out of 27 outs? That's 11% of the game. That's all. 3 out of 27, let's say you're in the playoffs and you stretch out your closer and you want him to get 6 outs. That's 22% of the game. Inherently, because of how much a closer is used, starting pitchers are more important. Position players are more important. What should the Pirates do with Felipe Vasquez? I look at the closer as once you're done building everything, once you've picked out the car you want, the make, the model, once you make some decisions about do I want four-wheel drive? Do I want, let's say, I'm not really a car guy. Do I want automatic wipers? Do I want a back wiper? Once you make decisions, what kind of interior do I want? Do I want leather? Do I want cloth? Once you make those decisions, Then you might decide, do I want to pay extra for satellite radio to go with terrestrial radio? Do I want to pay an extra $15 a month or whatever it is to listen to Yacht Rock radio? Because I can't, I don't want to listen to Amy Lawrence for the 100th time. I don't know. I mean, that to me is the closer. It's the last thing. And that's why you have the Dodgers now, and that's why you had the Cubs a couple of years ago that thought, we've got everything else. Everything else here is perfect, is lined up to win. All we're missing is that extra lights out guy in the back of the bullpen. A closer really isn't that valuable when you have pitchers like Kyle Crick and Michael Feliz as the bridge to get to him. So the Pirates, I think, need to figure out if they believe for 2020, if they have everything else set up. Do they have a really good starting rotation? Do they have the outfield they want? Do they know who their catcher is going to be? And then once all of that is settled, then you worry about your closer. Then you think about the last 11% of the game, the last three outs. Should the Pirates trade Felipe Vasquez? I'm absolutely open to it. And I'm now there because the division is done. 6.5 games out. Baseball Reference, their projection models. I go to Baseball Reference every day. I'm like a Joe Block. I go there every day. Baseball Reference gives the Pirates a 1% chance of winning the NL Central. No, I'm sorry. Double it. 2% chance. FanGraphs gives the Pirates a 1% chance of winning the division. Stat-based website, 538, a 4% chance. Managers play percentages. If I look at percentages, the Pirates have basically no shot of winning the division now after they just didn't care yesterday and benched Josh Bell for the biggest game of the year and brought in Michael Feliz to put out a fire when he's only been effective in like low to medium leverage situations all year. Probably not the best idea to throw him into the fire against a former MVP finalist who's the winning run, who can hit home runs, when the only time I've seen Feliz in a big spot like that, he gave up a grand slam to Hunter Pence earlier in the year in a game the Pirates peed away. How valuable is Felipe Vasquez when the rest of the team around him is in flux? You don't know if Jameson Taillon's going to pitch next year. You don't know if Chris Archer, if he's even going to be on the team, let alone what kind of Chris Archer you're getting. Are you going to bring Starling Marte back? So what are the Pirates? If you don't know, let Felipe Vasquez answer some of those other questions for you. It is a very volatile position, too. Not only are these pitchers, these closers, only asked to get three outs, sometimes six, in extreme situations, but it's also very hard to predict them year to year. I know right now Vasquez looks invincible. He's blown one save in the last year. One. But if he keeps this up, okay, like, yeah, there's Mariano Rivera, there's Trevor Hoffman, there are a few guys that are able to sustain success over a long period of time. Other guys really don't. Take, for instance, Mike Williams, who in 1 year with the Pirates in 2002 had a 2.93 ERA, closed out 46 games, had 46 saves the very next year. Had a 6.14 ERA. How does that happen? Relievers, they're sporadic. They're up and down. And Vasquez right now looks lights out. Looks like an automatic guy late in games. But that could change. And there's risk of that changing with closers more than any other position in the game. So, my bottom line point is this. If it were a starting pitcher, I would have a different opinion. If the Pirates had a legitimate ace, number two starter, even a really good number three starter, with a very team-friendly contract like the one Vasquez has right now, I wouldn't want to trade him. But I think this is something, because of his position, and because he's more valuable to a team like the Dodgers, or say the Braves, who might think we're one player away, we're three extra outs a game away from winning a World Series. We're that close. They overpay. Maybe you get your starting catcher for next year, which right now you don't have one. I'm sorry. Diaz is not the catcher of the future. He's got one home run this year. I know he was sick in spring training. He doesn't get a total free pass for that. Jacob Stallings, what would his dad say about his prospects of being the everyday catcher? He's 29 years old. How about your starting rotation? Is Jameson Taillon going to pitch next year? Is he even going to be available to you? What's his future? And even if he is healthy, what's behind him? Do you pick up Archer's option? I think right now the answer is no at $9 million. What's Trevor Williams? What I'm describing to you is an incomplete team. And so if Felipe Vasquez allows you to fill out, and again, make sure you're following me here. I'm not saying trade for a bunch of guys who are 3 or 4 years away. A team like the Dodgers, they've got a big catching prospect, Will Smith, with 18 home runs at AAA. They've got Derek May, a starting pitcher, top 50 prospect at AA. Take those two players, have them throw in somebody else who you like, a prospect who's like maybe at A-ball. Have them throw in a relief pitcher with years of control who's kind of like a Feliz type. Better than Feliz, but somebody that the Dodgers look at is completely disposable. Bring in those four guys and thank Vasquez for two great years. Because Vasquez is a closer, I think the Pirates have to be open to that. The only way they wouldn't be is if you felt like this team was right on the cusp of winning. But I think they've got too many open-ended questions for next year. 412-928-9370. That's the Edgar Snyder and Associates fan text line. One Steelers veteran, a former Super Bowl champ, compares Mike Tomlin to Bill Belichick on ESPN, and I can't believe what he said. That's next. It's the PM team on the Fan. Talked earlier in the show about NFL.com ranking Mike Tomlin as the 9th best coach in the NFL. I actually thought that was charitable, because when you make rankings, it's about where are they right now. And Mike Tomlin winning a Super Bowl back in 2008 and going to a Super Bowl in 2010 should have nothing to do with how you view or rate him right now. What kind of coach do you take him for right now? And I look at him as a coach that lost control of his team. His team choked. They blew a division last year. They had a 2.5-game lead with 6 games left, and they let a team in their division, quarterbacked by a rookie who ran the ball as much as he passed it, beat them out for a division title last year. And they did it because they squandered games in Denver and in Oakland because of a damn X-ray machine last year. So I don't have a high opinion of Mike Tomlin going into 2019. And the logic I've used here is, when you're power ranking things right now, you base it on what you think the player is right now, or what you think the team is right now, or what you think the coach is right now. Nobody in their right mind would rank Eli Manning ahead of Patrick Mahomes on a list of quarterbacks, but Manning has more passing yards, more touchdowns, more Super Bowl MVPs. So the fact that Mike Tomlin was highly successful earlier in his career doesn't have any bearing on what kind of coach I think he is right now. And if you're being fair, I think he's a middle-of-the-pack coach at best. Last year left a terrible taste in my mouth, and I can't imagine many people disagree with that. I know two Steelers who do. Anthony Ciccolo and Ramon Foster, who went on the record in this ESPN.com story on Mike Tomlin that you can read right now. Jeremy Fowler, the title, Steelers Mike Tomlin isn't here to be understood. I don't know really what that means. Isn't here to be understood. That's how I look at Tomlin's challenges. I don't understand those. He's lost 10 in a row. But anyways, Anthony Ciccolo said this about Tomlin. Every team except one team in the NFL would love to have him. Talking about the Patriots. Every team except one team in the NFL would love to have him. That's Ciccolo. Here's Ramon Foster on Tomlin. I'm sure if you ask all 1,200 players in the NFL which one of the coaches they'd rather play for, Belichick or Tomlin, Tomlin's at the top of the list. If that's true, if more NFL players would rather play for Tomlin than Belichick, then it's a dumber league than I thought. Because that would prove to me that NFL players would rather have fun than win. And I think winning equals fun. At least that's how I've looked at sports for my entire life. All 1,200 players in the league, if they had to pick one, would rather play for Tomlin than Belichick. Why? Because Belichick's so strict? I watched Rob Gronkowski the last few years in New England. It didn't look like he was neutered or censored or kept from really being himself. It looked like he had a lot of fun. I watched some, I hated it. It drove me nuts. I watched some Super Bowl parades in New England where it looked like Gronkowski was having a whale of a time. I'm sure if you ask all 1,200 players in this league which coach they'd rather play for, Belichick or Tomlin, Tomlin would be at the top of the list, says Ramon Foster. I mean, if that's true, then they why would you rather play for I can't. Speaking of Tomlin, for the purpose of this story, he was asked about Odell Beckham Jr. in Cleveland. What did Tomlin have to say about Odell Beckham Jr.? Play that clip for you coming up next. Follow us on Twitter at 93.7TheFan, driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, locations in North Huntington and the North Hills. That was What's at Steak, brought to you by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Midwestern beef, signature sandwiches, and classic salads open Monday through Friday for lunch. British Open leaderboard with Jeff in sports. It's the PM team on the fan.
I see great players, or we see great players week in and week out. We've seen him before. We got respect for his talent and the talents of everyone that they've acquired. But, it doesn't change our agenda or our focus.
Mike Tomlin to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler on the Browns getting Odell Beckham Jr. I think Tomlin's learned his lesson a little bit here. He does this interview with ESPN, and most of the quotes in the story are from other people. I think one thing Tomlin has learned, it is interesting because Tomlin has also said that it was basically a myth that the outside world looked at the Steelers and screamed dysfunction, but if you were actually inside their locker room, you'd see a pretty calm, professional room, which I think is completely bogus. But I think it's interesting that Tomlin does this sit-down where Jeremy Fowler flies down to Virginia to meet with Tomlin on his turf, and none of the quotes in this story are from Tomlin. They're from Ramon Foster, Arthur Motes, Anthony Ciccolo. Very little from Tomlin. And I think it's because Tomlin doesn't want to talk. I think the way things have unraveled here, after he made that big guarantee, oh, I can't wait to see the Patriots again, part three, fireworks. And then his team got embarrassed by Jacksonville. I think that this is proof that Tomlin has at least smartened up. He might not admit it. I think he's too arrogant to admit it, but I think this is proof that he's not going to give any bulletin board material. And you heard it in that clip on Odell Beckham Jr.
You know, I see great players, or we see great players week in and week out. We've seen him before. We got respect for his talent and the talents of everyone that they've acquired. But, you know, it doesn't change our agenda or our focus.
Yeah, just kind of dodging the question there, tiptoeing around it. Doesn't say what Mike Tomlin might really be thinking. If you got a few beers in him and it was off the record, he might say, we're not going to be able to stop Odell Beckham Jr. Legitimate number one wide receivers against the Steelers last year. Michael Thomas, New Orleans, 11 catches, 109 yards, touchdown. Keenan Allen, Chargers, 14 catches, 148 yards, touchdown. Mike Evans, Tampa, 6 catches, 137 yards, touchdown. Tyreek Hill, Kansas City, 5 catches, 90 yards, touchdown. So two games, those are all number one wide receivers. Two games, Thomas and Allen were both in double digits, both over 100 yards, both caught touchdowns. Mike Evans didn't have volume, but he had 137 yards and a touchdown, and the Steelers contained Tyreek Hill to 5 and 90 in a touchdown. Yeah, I think when the die is cast on the 2019 NFL season and the epilogue here is written on what transpired, what happened on the 2019 campaign, I think one of the main stories will be that the Browns did not live up to the hype. That the Browns will not live up to the hype. I'm a Giants fan. From where I sit, the Giants' biggest rival is the Eagles. I want to beat the Eagles more than I want to beat the Cowboys. Odell Beckham Jr. in his career against Philadelphia, 1-7. In the biggest games against the measuring stick team, the team that's won the Super Bowl in that division in the last 5 years, Odell Beckham Jr. went 1-7 against Philly. Now, I know Baltimore stole Cleveland's team, but really the Browns' rival is the Steelers. And that's the team they've been measuring themselves up against and looking up at since they came back to the league in 99. In order for Odell Beckham Jr. to work in Cleveland, he's got to beat the Steelers. 1-7 in his career against Philadelphia. So what is going to happen? I think if history's any guide, Odell Beckham Jr., given the fact that the Steelers have Steven Nelson, Joe Hayden, Artie Burns, I guess Cameron Sutton, Mike Hilton, they don't have great corners. So I could see Odell Beckham Jr. putting up a lot of immaterial stats, numbers against the Steelers. I don't think he's going to punk on them. So, in a week's time, the Steelers are going to report to work. And that question you just heard Mike Tomlin answer in a very politically correct fashion is going to be asked in Latrobe. It has to be, right? And most of the reporters who are going to be there next week know they're not going to get really, they're not going to get big time headline worthy quotes on that. They're not going to get great answers. But when the Steelers players roll into St. Vincent College, isn't that going to be one of the first few questions? How is this year different? No Antonio Brown. Okay, the Browns, what do you think? Beckham Jr., Mayfield, are they for real? And I'm going to say it again, and I can get away with saying it because Knucklehead isn't here today. Mueller's not here. I mean that in an endearing way. I love Chris. The Steelers should win the division. Tomlin's the only thing that's really holding me back. Because the defense is his baby. And they put a lot of draft picks into this defense, and I'm ready to see some results for once. And maybe Devin Bush will be the difference. Maybe. But they've blown it with some linebackers now. Watt, they got right. He's a player. Dupree isn't, and Jones wasn't. All right. Fan weather's brought to you by Sun Chevy, Route 19 in McMurray. Join Sun Chevy for their all-star open house all month long and open the door to a new Sun Chevy, high of 87, low of 74. We got a surprise for you next. No Zeiss tonight. So we've got a special guest host from 6 to 10. Tomorrow we'll be at Redbeard's downtown. Down there for Pirates and Phillies. Man, is PNC Park going to look like Citizens Bank Park West this week? Phillies tickets have been in demand this whole year. They've had the biggest spike in attendance because of all the hype and hoopla that came with the Bryce Harper signing. I wonder if Philly fans bought tickets to this weekend way in advance. Is that middle of July? Easy trip. A lot of baseball fans like going to see other ballparks. And this one's tremendous. Man, I would not be surprised if it was half red Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, given the state of the Pirates as well, which is sad. All right. Special guest host next. If you're lost on the British Open, Jeff will give you a leaderboard and more coming up at 6. It's Stacy. Stacy will. Thank you, Jermichael. That's why we pay you the big bucks. It's not quite your Packers salary, but it's close. All right. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 2 on 93.7 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.